A few minutes ago, I was driving up the driveway, and a bunch of you all were outside doing walking, and I was happy for you, because I know what it's like to have been on retreat for 3 days, and then to go outside on a night like tonight. We get sensitive when we're on retreat. And nature takes on a whole new quality. Have you experienced that? Yes, the suchness of it is just palpable. And you go out on a quiet night like tonight. Well, it's a little windy. It's kind of wild tonight too. But it's walking out and just perceiving it when we're quiet like this is really one of the lovely benefits of being on retreat. So I was happy for those of you who are out there and kind of communing with it. Or that's my projection. Who knows what you were doing? Speaking of projections, tonight we're going to dive into the world of thoughts. Yes, thoughts. Thoughts play a, they tend to play a special, how or have a special place in our meditation. Not because they in and of themselves are somehow special. Thoughts are the same as everything else, which I'll go into in a moment. But because our relationship to them tends to be problematic. And because of that problematic relationship, they can tend to play a special role. As I said, thoughts are identical to everything else, meaning they have the same nature as everything else, which means that when conditions are supportive for a thought to be born, it will be born. And then when those conditions become unfavorable for its existence to continue, it will pass away. All things in this universe follow that, have that same nature. It's called one of the three universal characteristics of phenomenon. Just to say, another one is things change when these are all intertwined, right? And another one is that things don't exist independently from everything else. So let's say you're sitting here and we're meditating and you hear there's some folks from facilities outside repairing something or doing something, and you hear some nails and some sawing, right? And all of a sudden the thought arises in your mind, oh yeah, that house that's being built in my neighborhood, I wonder if they finished it while I was on retreat. So that thought arose dependent on you hearing that sound. If you hadn't heard hammering and sawing, the thought, I wonder if they finished building that house in my neighborhood, would not have arisen. Nor would it have arisen if there wasn't a house being built in your neighborhood. You could have heard the hammering, the sawing, but no house being built, no thought. So just as a simple example, they arise when the conditions are supportive for them to arise. And that's the same nature, that's your nature. Right? You arose in this world because the conditions were supportive of them. Thoughts are not a problem. There's nothing inherent within a thought that makes it problematic to our meditation. The problem isn't, I shouldn't say problem. I don't have time to think of a different word, but the problem isn't in the thought. It's our relationship. Our relationship to them. We can think they're a problem because it's thought that we tend to identify with and get carried away with, right, when we're meditating. Yeah? And so, oh, that's wrong. I'm being present and all of a sudden I wake up from being lost in thought. wandering through the mind-made world. And then we think, oh, that's the problem. Right? Very easy to think that, given how much, you know, we get lost in, or you could say identify with thought, meaning we believe the thoughts in our mind. When we say we identify with thought, our practice in Vipassana meditation isn't to get rid of thought. It's to become aware of thought and become aware of sounds and become aware of body sensations and etc. Emotions, Jean was talking about. So let me say it again. Our job in Vipassana meditation in terms of concerning thoughts is not to get rid of thoughts. It's to be aware of thought. Now, there's various kinds of thoughts. Some just kind of flitter through, kind of like, gee, I wonder if they finished building the house, like that kind of stuff, just kind of sundry stuff. Gee, I wonder what's for dinner, or things like that. Some thoughts have, we call them, they're more sticky, right? They're like, think me, you know? And they tend to be something that we're really looking forward to and excited about, or something that the opposite, that like, oh, I have to go to that meeting next week, or oh, I have to have that conversation with so-and-so, or whatever. Those also tend to pull us in. And those are the ones that we tend to then get carried away by, wander through the mind-made world. It could be 10 seconds, 30 seconds, 5 minutes, and then mindfulness arises and we wake up. So some kind of just drift through. Some take us on a bit of a ride. Yeah. Then there's what I call the inner dialogue. Have you noticed? It's just running. And it could be, sometimes the inner dialogue could be associated with what we're noticing, like the commentator, now I'm stepping, now I'm reaching, or have you noticed that one? It's just like saying what we're doing, which actually isn't so bad. At least we're kind of present with what we're doing. But sometimes the inner dialogue's just saying all sorts of stuff. Sometimes that inner dialogue gets replaced with a song. Any songs this week? Yeah. So that's a form of thought, yeah? This kind of background chatter. So different types of thought, but they all have the same nature. Here's the important part, or one of the important parts. Whenever you become aware of thought, whether it's noticing the conditions that are supportive for a certain thought to arise, and actually just feeling the energy of that thought wanting to be born, even before it happens. Like that's, with strong mindfulness, that can be known. From that, from knowing a thought that way, like even before it's born, just seeing that it's pregnant, all the way to 20-minute ride through and then waking up. Both of those are actually considered the same. In those moments, what you're aware of is thought. Doesn't matter the rest of it. What's happening right in that moment is what you're aware of is thought. Vipassana meditation, the description of it is being aware of our moment-to-moment experience with non-judgmental attention. That's the description of the practice. So in that moment, you're aware of thought. You're doing the practice. If we can just really start to let that land and sink in, we'll save ourselves a lot of kind of turmoil and angst in our practice. I don't care, the whole sit, 45 minutes sit, completely gone until, oh, thought. Because that's what you're noticing at that moment. What came before doesn't matter. So when you become aware of thought, you are doing the practice. You're doing the Vipassana practice. We can notice when thoughts are present, this just like the hindrances, and we can notice when they're not present. Just like anything else. Sometimes thoughts they're not present. Usually it's not for long. Lots of thoughts go through the mind, and again, that's not problematic. Sometimes, though, they slow down. And what's problematic about that is it's very pleasant. Yeah? It's like, oh. It's like the refrigerator going off when you're home. Have you ever noticed that? It's quiet. There's no music playing, no TV. You think it's quiet, and then the refrigerator shuts off. It's like, oh. Right? When thoughts stop, especially if they stop for more than just a split second, they can, over a period of time, it's like that times 10. So it's very pleasant. Then, because it's pleasant, we go, that's it. That's why I'm practicing. I want more of that. And that's the wrong view. That's that. When I said the incorrect, we have an incorrect relationship with it. One is the incorrect relationship is we believe them, or we tend to believe them. But the other incorrect relationship is that we think a lack of thought is what this is about. And I'm here to tell you that is not so. If we're doing up, no, I'm not even going to go down there and confuse you. It's not what it's about. So just like, if you take anything from tonight's practice and talk, it's that we're not here to get rid of thoughts, and that's not the goal of the practice. But we like what's pleasant. And when thoughts tend to stop, it's quite pleasant. So when they're not there, please enjoy that. Really. That, I don't know if I mentioned this, the Buddha said sense pleasures are to be enjoyed. He said that. That's what you do with them. They are enjoyable. They're pleasant, so you enjoy them. We just don't pin our hopes of happiness on them. We tend to conflate that. This is the perennial kind of problem. We conflate what's pleasant as what's going to bring us happiness. Right? Isn't that what you think or what you thought for those of you who have been practicing for a while? Yeah. Those two are just completely conflated. Pleasant, happy. Yep, just wed together. But after we can practice for a while, we can see pleasant things bring pleasantness. They do. They deliver on that, absolutely, and we should enjoy that when they're happening. What they don't bring, though, is happiness. They bring pleasantness. They don't have the ability to bring happiness. It's not what they do. They bring pleasantness because they're pleasant. So it's almost like starting to tease that apart. And that, just to circle back, that really comes into play when we notice thoughts aren't present because it's very pleasant. And we go, oh, I want to go down that road. Basically, when we become aware of thought and kind of work with thoughts in our practice, we're not so concerned with the content of the thought. Not so much. We're more just concerned that thoughts are happening. So, let's say a sound, right? Gee, was that a high-pitched sound or a low-pitched sound? You know, no, it was just hearing. Yeah? We're not worried about kind of what kind of sound it is. Same thing with thoughts. It's just that thought is happening, that this process, that this object is arising in our field of consciousness, and we're knowing it. That's it. That's what we want to know. We want to know that it's happening, and we want to know its nature. We want to get to see it for what it is. Because the more we see it for what it is, the less we tend to believe it, grasp after it, and identify with it. And one of the best things we can do is, once we've become aware of a thought, okay, so mindfulness arises, we realize, oh, thoughts are present. Then we notice, what impact does becoming aware of thought have on the thought? What happens to the thought when we become aware of it? That's going to be, you have two basic instructions tonight for once we start practicing. Be clear when you become aware of thoughts, and then notice what happens to the thought when you become aware of it. That's the instructions. One kind of, I don't know, fun thing to do, this can help just maybe draw the attention to thoughts a little bit more, is you can notice, are you thinking in pictures, in words, or in both? Just check. See, wow, is it just verbal dialogue going through my head right now? Is it just pictures with no words? Or is it a combination of pictures and words? Not like one's better than another, but just as a way to move closer to the experience, become more intimate with it. How do we practice? So how do we do this? Do we go looking for thoughts? No, not at all. Just like we don't go looking for the hindrances. We don't go looking for anything. You know, Jean talked about, we don't go digging for emotions. We just notice what's present. And when we notice a thought is present, then, thoughts. Simple. But very tricky territory because of our habit, strong, deep habit, to believe our thoughts and get carried away by them. But that's okay. You'll wake up at some point. Okay. So let's come to standing and do some standing first. Let's go ahead and build our our stance, bringing attention to the feet. I saw someone just come up on their toes. That's actually a good thing to do, to kind of wake up the feet. We don't pay them much attention, so we kind of wake them up. Maybe wiggle your toes, curl them up, curl them under. Yeah. These things work hard for us. And then once you come to standing, bring your attention to the bottoms of your feet. And then think about soft ankles. Remove them. The sense of them not being locked or tight. And moving up to the knees, so they're not locked, unlocked to slightly bent. Tucking the pelvis under as though you are about to sit down in a chair and then stopped.
Bringing your attention to the back, letting the back rise up from this stable platform, letting the head rest on top of the spine. Pretending that you have a small bird eggs under your armpits and holding your arms in such a way that you don't crush them. Bringing attention to the four seams where our limbs meet our torso. Getting the feeling that those areas are open. Not like a book that's closed, but a book that's open. You can drop your shoulder blades down your back a little bit to get a sense of the arm seams being open. You can bring your weight a little bit onto the outside edges of your feet to get a sense of the leg seams being a bit open. Imagining the line running from the crown of the head down through the body, kind of down through the back of the sinuses, the back of the throat, down just in front of the spine, so it's pretty far back, down out through the perineum, and this line is plumb to the earth, and we want our upper body to coalesce around that vertical line. Letting the body relax, letting the shoulders drop, letting the belly drop. Letting the attention rest with body standing. We can know body sitting. We can know body standing. When we stand in Wu Qi, there's this sense of kind of really inhabiting our uprightness. Right? This is what human beings did as a species. We became upright. And we kind of fully inhabit that uprightness in this posture. Maybe you want to get a sense of the crown of the head slightly pushing up to the sky. And at the same time, really staying connected with the feet to the earth. We can be aware, just like when sitting, of specific points. Of course, in this case, it's going to be the bottoms of the feet. And we can also have a more global awareness of the body standing. This is a very purposeful posture. Let's go ahead if you wish. Of course, you can meditate standing. I'm going to sit down, and those of you who want to can join me. And let's sit down and see if we can recreate this purposeful posture, especially the back rising up part.
checking, do the seams where the arms meet the torso have a sense of being open? Connecting with body sitting. Remember our attitude of attention. We want to be settled back and letting experience come to us, not leaning forward and trying to notice it. Receive the experience of body sitting. And as we turn our attention to what we specifically use as an anchor or main meditation object, letting that experience, you know, receive it, let it come to you. And for this meditation period, just practicing being with your anchor until you notice thoughts. Try using the mental note of thoughts just for clarity about what you're noticing. And then the second part of the instruction, notice what happens to the thought when you become aware of it. Enjoy moments of no thought. Remember to notice when thought is not present. Just remember that's not what we're after. It's just what we're noticing. Well, what happens to a thought when you become aware of it? They just crumble. These things that have the power to control our lives, we see them for what they are, just wisps of energy that just fall apart when we become aware of them. Mostly, sometimes not, but it's our unconscious identification with them that keeps them going. As soon as we become aware of them, keep seeing that. We have one announcement that we wanted to make this evening. Kind of as an extension of not writing notes to one another on the board, the sense of really being with our own experience, we want to really ask you to keep to yourself in that of not touching other people. We can have the best intention in the world. It's like, even like, oh no, you go ahead, go in front of me in front of the line. You know, like, sweet, lovely, right? The intention is sweet, but we don't know how it's going to land, right? The intention may be kind, but we don't know the impact. We get very sensitive on retreat. You're all more sensitive than you think you are. So since we don't know how it's going to land, then it's like, lowest common denominator, the best way to be safe and to hold everyone's safety and sense of well-being is to just refrain. Okay, so we really want to ask you to please support our retreat by just not touching other people. Okay, thank you. Okay, walking period and then coming back for chanting in our last sitting.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.